Welcome to church, everybody! Wow! That's how you do it. Yes. It's great to be in church. We have been looking through the book of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians. We had the nice bit. Paul wrote the nice bit first. He said, I love you guys. You're amazing. You're wonderful. And then he lined up a great big slap. And that's the bit we're working through. Is that exciting? I look at Paul and I think, you, dude, you just know who you are. He's just like, this is who I am. I am Paul. I am an apostle of Christ. You know who I am. Here's my resume. And he goes through it at the start of Corinthians. And then he winds up and he starts preaching to them and imploring the church to stop letting the city leak into the church, to stop letting the immorality of the world take over the righteousness of the church. And he starts to talk to them about what he has done to teach the people and to lead the people. And he reminds them that he was there baptizing and he was there making tents with them and he loves them dearly. But he says to them, my friends, you are getting some things wrong. And this book goes through some pretty dark human behavior to try and kick it out of the church. I remind you that the church is a movement, not an exclusive club. So our arms are always wide open. But when you come into Christ, there are things that are chipped away, chipped away, chipped away. And you are supposed to mature in Christ. And I remember my mum saying to me many, many times as a teenager, why are you so immature? I think that was last week too, but why don't you understand? Why don't you understand? I find myself saying it to my own children. What do you not understand? The soap and the water go in this sink and the clean dishes go in that sink. And afterwards you put them away. What do you not understand? Do you want to eat tomorrow? Would you like to eat from a plate tomorrow? Those kinds of things. Of course, most teenagers would go, I don't care. But that's the point. Paul's saying to us, stop being children. If you want to sum this whole thing up, it's just this. You ready? It's two words. You ready? Grow. Grow up. How many people have ever had someone stare at them and say, why can't you just grow up? Now, there's a difference between keeping the childlike nature of the joy and the simplicity of life and just being foolish. But here's the thing, the cross is the most foolish thing that anyone could have ever seen, and yet Paul speaks of it as the power of the gospel. To those who are being saved, it is wisdom and it is the power of salvation. But to those who do not understand it, it is a stumbling block because it makes no sense to have a divinity turn up as flesh in humanity and be humiliated on a cross outside of the city and call that person the Savior. That makes no sense. But we know that he took our sin to the cross and the sin of us was laid on his shoulders and he took our burden and he took our shame and he took our pain and he humbled himself in the greatest way anyone could humble themselves and said to us, here's what I'm willing to do for you. I'm willing to lower myself to lower than the lowest to show you how high you can be lifted if you would just learn to humble yourself. And that's the individual uniqueness of our faith. It's not a religion. It's not showing up here and you mark a box and hooray, you're a good person. It's a movement of faith of people convinced and convicted that the foolishness of the cross is the power of salvation. That's it. That's the whole story. I could get off right now, but I've got a few more things to say. So here's what we've been learning. Week one, we talked about the power of the cross being the antidote for the poverty of the people. What's the poverty that we have in such a wealthy nation? It's not poverty of wallet, it's poverty of soul. But our God is a God who said he is our shepherd, and when he walks alongside us, there is nothing that we will want. There is nothing you could lack. In other words, all good things, all spiritual gifts, all that you need has been given to you through the power of the cross. You have everything in your hand that you need. So the poverty that we have, the insecurities that we have, the immaturity that we have is all based on us not allowing Christ to tell us who we are. You need to be convinced and convicted that the power of the cross is power to not only save your soul, but to mature your heart, to mature your mind, and to bring your thoughts and your actions into line with those worthy of a saint. Where are the saints in the room? Any saints? Okay, we're gonna do this until you're convinced. Are you a saint? Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, when the saints go marching in. Ba-da-ba-da-bop. I just wish James Morrison was here to play that because it always sounds better on trumpet. But there you go. You are a saint. If you've come to Christ and you've given your heart to Him and you've confessed your sin and claimed that He is Lord of your life, then you are saved. And you should be maturing in the faith. That's what we're asked to do. But the first step is to recognize that the power of the cross is the antidote for the poverty of the people. In week two, we looked at the second half of chapter one, and Sharon, St. Sharon, I should say, St. Sharon, because Mark anointed her St. Sharon last week, which is great. She taught us not to be stupid, which I was just really thankful for. Les, were you thankful for that? I was really thankful. I got together with my mates. I said, you're not stupid anymore, are you? He said, no, nor are you. It's great. It's good. But she said this. She said, be humble, be curious, and be clear. Be humble about what you have, the knowledge and the wisdom that you have from the power of the cross. Be curious about what you don't know, but be clear in stating the power of the cross and the beauty of the gospel that saves mankind and reconciles them under Christ. Yeah? Be clear about that. Don't back off on that, but don't be condemning either. Don't be stupid. is essentially what we learned. And in week three last week, St. Mark came up here and said this one thing that we've all been asking all week, haven't we? Could you help me understand? How many people text that or sent that to Mark in some way? I just like spammed him with it. Just like, can you help me understand? Can you help me understand? Can you help me understand? Can you help me understand if you're in conflict, if you're in, and this works in your relationship with humanity, with others, and your relationship with God. Can you help me understand? I don't understand. And that's the humble position. That's the posture of humility that allows you to say, I just don't know. There are things I don't know, but things I want to know. Knowledge that I seem to have, but it hasn't dropped into the heart yet and created wisdom. I'm not anchored in this thing yet. If there are mature Christians around you, and you'll know them by their fruit, yeah? Not just someone that says, I can talk about the Bible, but someone that shows fruit in their life. If there's maturity around you, why don't you gather with those people and ask them the question, would you help me understand this chapter of the word? Would you help me understand this behavior that I have? Would you help me understand how to get along with others? We are a complex community with one thing in common. The one thing we have in common is that the power of the cross is our salvation. That's the one thing we have in common. Beyond that, everything's up for discussion and it gets complicated. Because you know what? You guys don't mind us standing up here and preaching, but hanging out with us is a whole different ball game. Ask my wife. She likes me most days of the week. I was going to get a little flag at the front of the house. You know, put the green one up if I'm in the good books. I don't know. Won't do that. That was Stan's suggestion, not mine. It doesn't matter. Remember where we're at. We're in Corinth. Corinth is a city that in 146 BC was completely razed to the ground, and in 44 BC was built again by Julius Caesar, and Julius Caesar made this city to glorify himself. That's what he did. Didn't last very long. He got assassinated soon after. So there you go. The rule of thumb here is don't build yourself a city and name it after you. I don't know. But from there, this is a city of trade. It is a very, very famous port. You can come and go. And in places where people come and go as frequently as people came and went from Corinth, you can get away with anything because you're only there for a short time. And how many people know that where there is no boundaries, humanity loses the plot? So there was huge problems with sexual immorality, with worship of other gods and false gods. There was huge problems with that, but Rome didn't mind as long as no one stirred anyone else up. The Jews had been kicked out of Rome and a lot of them had landed in Corinth, and that's where Paul had come. Paul had come and spent a year and a half in this city building these people. He'd not only worked with the people that had no knowledge of the things of God. He liked to reason with the Greeks, yeah? He liked to reason with them. He was okay with that. He not only was able to convince some of the Greeks to come on board with this gospel, he actually went in to the Jewish synagogue and converted not one but two of the rulers of the Jewish synagogue. So you've got this situation where Crispus, who was the ruler of the Jewish synagogue, is now, you know, not in the synagogue because he's now following this thing that looks like a cult but is called the Way. Yeah? Waymaker. It's the Way. They're following the truth of Christ. They're starting to understand it. There's a revelation. And then, of course, we talked about how Sosthenes was converted. And now, not only was Sosthenes converted, but he's sitting there scribing this letter for Paul. Paul was a monster evangelist. And here's the thing that I find about people. People who are absolutely convinced of the thing they want to tell you. You know those passionate people that you just can't get away from? They're like, I just want to sell you this vacuum cleaner. Those people. And you're like, I'm the guy that goes, I can't buy the vacuum cleaner just to get you out of my house. I didn't do that. This guy is so convinced because he's got nothing left to lose. He was a Jew amongst Jews. He was a Pharisee amongst Pharisees. He had everything and he gave it all up. He gave up all of his power, all of his position, all of his honor, and he was humbled right down to the ground to the point of being, you know, scales came over his eyes and he had to be prayed for it at Simon's house and scales came off his eyes and he goes through this whole journey of many years of learning what it is to follow Christ and to disciple people and then he starts to go and plant churches and you can read that through Acts 17 and 18. You can see this missionary journey that he goes on where he lands at Corinth and he realizes that there's this bond that he has with these people. He is so passionate for these people. And so this letter comes from a place of going, remember how much I invested in you. Remember how much I loved you. Remember how much it meant to us all to come into alignment with Christ and kick out the evil of the city around you. Not to judge others, but to show a different way. My friends, if ever there was a picture that helped us understand our own position, it's this one. Because we live in spaces where people are trying to replace the things that God says only He can fill, you know? They're trying to find distractions and trying to fill those places, those soul places, where only the power of the Holy Spirit, only that you know, they call it a God-shaped hole. Have you heard that phrase? A God, there's something in us that needs our Creator to minister to us. And that's the hope that we carry, and that's the hope that we're convinced of. And my friends, if we are not convinced of that, then we are wasting our time. But this morning, perhaps you've come and you've said, you know what, even last week, Justin, I was convinced. But this week has slapped me around. This week has made me wonder if there actually is a good God out there. Jody and I have had an incredibly interrupted week with illness, and we've sort of caught daytime naps to catch up on the nighttime sleeps that we missed out on because of health issues and with our children. And they're okay now, I'm happy to report. But in the midst of that, trying to balance life and trying to stay, you know that parenting thing where you're just trying to stay sane? You're just trying to be reasonable with other adults when you've had no sleep? and you just want to like go and hide in the corner. Anyone had one of those weeks this week? I just want to go hide in the corner. Yeah, bless you, my son. Well, bless you all. But when you find yourself in that place, the only thing that you're left with is your foundation. And honestly, I worry for people that don't have a surety of faith, a great hope that doesn't disappoint, a peace that passes understanding. Because when you're in the fetal position, in the corner, trying to get the world to just go away, the only thing left is your foundation. And this is what Paul comes to them with. He says, you know what? I want to talk to you about the basics, people, the absolute basics. What's left when there's nothing left? And I feel like when I'm reading this, I was saying to Pastor Stan earlier, it's been so convicting reading through this because I've been reminded again that that's all we have. I have nothing more than the foundation that Christ allowed for me. It took me a while, but a couple of weeks ago, a friend of ours put up a post on social media where they had to say goodbye to their 18-year-old son. And he lost his battle with mental illness. And I saw that post go up and I desperately wanted to say something wise, something clever, I don't know, something that didn't look like, you know, a throwaway kind of cliche, thoughts and prayers, I don't know. And I stared at the screen and I couldn't deal with it. And many of you as parents, and many of you that have children that you love around you, and many of you have been affected by this devastation that happens. You understand what I'm talking about. It's hard to come up with something. And so one of these nights when I was looking at my children, I think we'd just put another one through the shower because they'd vomited or I don't know. And I looked at my child and I was just moved again to realize the weight of what it was to hold this life in my hand, in my leadership, in whatever it is. And then, of course, through this week, we've had just devastating news on our televisions, reminding us of the hopelessness that people feel. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, and I finally went, I'm just going to write to my friends. So I did it with a messenger. I didn't want to do it in the public sphere. And I basically wrote by saying, I don't know what to write, but I love you guys. And I'm so thankful for your generosity and the beauty that you've brought into my life. And I'm so devastated for you. And I honestly can't remember what I wrote. But I wrote it with tears falling down my face because I just simply couldn't handle the idea that friends of ours were having to wake up each day and not see their son. And even as I hit send on that message, I thought, I'm an idiot. I've got nothing. I felt like I've got nothing. But the next day, I got the most beautiful responses from them. And I realized again that our whole task is to be salt and light. That's it, just salt and light. But the salt and light that you give is going to come from the foundation that you have. And if you don't anchor yourself in the wisdom of the word and in the maturity of the saints, you'll just be making stuff up and you will be handing out cliches and platitudes and you won't be helping. In fact, in some cases, you will be harming. You can't just say to everyone, just expect a miracle and walk away. You can't just say to someone, I'm praying for you and never do. I worry about the amount of people that I've said that to and never actually prayed for them. Or never actually done something to intervene. But what I've realized is I don't have enough time in the day to intervene in all the situations that my heart is drawn to. I don't have enough time. So I need the gathering of the saints. I need you, you need me. We need to be more effective together. And that's what Paul is saying to this church. Together, if you will get rid of the stuff that is dividing you, perhaps you could unify around the things that I kept telling you. You are supposed to bring salt and light. You are supposed to carry a hope that does not disappoint. Faith should be your anchor. You should know the power of the cross is the antidote for the poverty of the people. You should know how to not be foolish. You should humble yourselves continually. You should come together and pray together and fellowship together. But he starts chapter 3 by saying, I've got to give you milk again because you're still children. I wanted to give you meat, but I have to give you milk because your humanity keeps coming through. Your carnality keeps coming through. Why are you so carnal? Why is it that the flesh keeps interrupting? Why are you letting the city invade your church? Stop it, stop it, stop it. And then he goes on again to say, but who is Paul and who is Apollos? Why would you even think of these? We are simply builders. He says, I was a wise builder. He says, I came and I just laid a foundation for you so that you could build something on it. But I'm not the one building something. We've got other people coming in and giving wisdom to that. So stop showing off thinking you were saying, I was baptized by Paul. I know the cool kid. It's not about that. I was humbled to the very core of who I am so that I could bring you this gospel. And the power of this gospel only really takes hold when humility drives it. I've said for many years, you can't trick people into the kingdom. As a musician, of course, I've played a lot of music on stages for Christian festivals and churches and all sorts of things. And people often ask me, what's the difference between performance and worship? What they're really asking me is, what part is showing off and what part is showing God? And we come up with all sorts of rhythms around this, and we do it in all of our liturgies. We come up with ways that we're trying desperately to show off how humble we are. And I've done it myself as a musician. I've tried to back off. But anyone that's seen me sing or play music, you know, it's whatever. When I play guitar, my foot's just going to smack the floor. My head's going to do things and my body's going to whatever. And I tried for ages as a music director, my first job in churches. I tried, okay, well, you know, it's all about a humble heart. And we're just you know, here I am to worship. Here I am to bow down. Here I am to say that you're my, you know, I was very humble. And then people would say, yeah, but you're showing off. And I'd say, no, I'm not. And they'd say, yes, you are. And I'd say, no, I'm not. Yes, you are. And now I've got a division. So here's my answer. The difference between performance and worship is your heart. Because I've been to Coldplay concerts and they look a lot like worship sessions. And I've seen politicians speak from pulpits and they look a lot like preachers. My friends, only you know if what is happening today for you is a performance or is worship. And you know what? In a sense, I could care less because it's not mine to judge. But you should care. Otherwise, we're just going to be talking about everyone just love each other and we'll all just get along. It's harder than that. And that's what Paul is saying. It's much, much harder than that. And yet there is a beautiful simplicity to it. If we could just talk about what it is that anchors us and what helps us be the instruments of worth. Paul talks about those that build with silver and gold and fine stones. Some also build with sticks and wood. And the fire will go through. And the test will come. And you will be saved, but some of us will only be saved as ones escaping from the fire. In other words, your salvation is sure, but my goodness, wouldn't it be better if you could stand strong in the time of trial, that your character would be developed because these trials develop perseverance, and perseverance, faith, and faith, hope, and this hope does not disappoint. Romans 5, stick it on your wall. You need that one. One of my favorite scriptures, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 20. I love it because it sounds like Richie Beno would read that out. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 20 sees this. It says, in a big house, in a wealthy person's house, there are articles not only of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay. Some are made for noble purposes and some for ignoble purposes. And if we will rid ourselves of the latter, then we will be used by the master as items of gold and silver, ready to do any good work approved by the master's hand. My friend, I want to be the gold and silver in the house of the Lord. Same guy that wrote that wrote this. Your foundation should be rock solid. You need to kick out the immorality of the city and tap in to the righteousness of the cross. That's it. I cannot change you. I am a parent. I know that I can lead a person. I can help their will get moved, but I also know that every child in my house has a mind of their own. And every time I try and give them the same instruction, I have to tweak it just a little to suit that person. And you know that some preachers work for you and some preachers don't, and some worship leaders work for you and some worship leaders don't. And I'm saying, forget about all that. Get before God, lay your burden at the foot of the cross, and understand that for you, the poverty that you have, the lack that you have, will be taken over and lifted up and made whole in the power of the cross. And that's all you need. That's it. That's all you need. I love simple, and even though I understand that I'm a complex person, I still desperately try to find simple. And I love the testimony that my friend Aaron gave, and some of you have not seen this one yet, so I wondered if I could just get Aaron's testimony on the screen for you to understand how easy it is sometimes to risk everything and follow God. Let's look at this.
Christ in 94, I think, 93, 94. About to cut a story short, that's when we accepted Jesus Christ into our life. And from there on, from that day onwards, life just changed totally to the point where you say you're not in control. And at times become very scary. But there was one moment where I remember wanting to join a mission called MMM. We were at that time co-pastoring a church, but I didn't feel comfortable. I'm not the preacher type, the type to prepare sermons and get up on Sundays and all that. I'm more working with my hands. So it seemed natural to find a proper slot, which we were encouraged to do. And joining MMM, they gave us the opportunity to manage either Adelaide or manage Victoria. I said to Anne-Marie, my wife, I said, how about you pray in your way over the weekend, I'll do mine, and we'll come together and see what the outcome is. Wanting to give God an opportunity in this, not just do things because we're excited. I did my usual thing in arguing with God, because at the halfway through I felt God was saying, go to Adelaide. Well, that's not really logical, because we just built a brand new house. We'd only been in it a couple of months. And we had grandchildren coming along, which, and they were very close. So part of my ace up my sleeve with God was that if Anne-Marie said yes, then I'll go. And I knew she wouldn't say yes because of the grandchildren coming along. So I presented that to Anne-Marie, and she immediately turned around and said, I agree. When do we leave? So for us, it's a case of looking to see where God's at work and joining him and bringing other people along on that journey as well and helping them see him at work, because there's nothing greater, nothing. We then kind of were very confident and moved forward pretty fast. In fact, we had all our finances tied up within about 6 weeks, and we're on the road. From the time we made the decision to go to the time we left, I think it was only a 2 month period. And we had a trailer on the back that closed and we were gone. And the rest, as I say, is history. It was an absolutely fantastic time chasing God's coattails, just hanging on and seeing him at work.
Just hanging on and seeing God at work. Anybody feel like they're just hanging on? But God is still at work, even when I don't see it, even when I don't feel it, you're working. I like writing songs, and I like writing simple songs because I only have 4 chords. But this is my friend Nath. Everyone, so I'm just going to invite one of my best mates in the world up. Say hi, Nath. Hi, Nath. Nath plays every instrument better than me. Go over there. Oh, sorry. When I first met him, he wouldn't do that. But I've taught him a bit of Greek. Don't know how to speak the language, but I'll kiss you. And so we sat down a couple of Easters ago, and tried to write something simple. What Paul's talking to us about here is our immaturity. And he's saying your humanity will show your immaturity. But more of God equals less of you, and that's going to grow you up. He says your foundation will expose your stability. Go for gold. Get the gold in your life. That's what you need. Your togetherness, your unity, is held by your maturity. Why do things fall apart? Because people argue over stupid, stupid things. Often things that we know history has taught us will never be resolved. And so we sat down one Easter and we started to write a song to allow some reflection for people on the power of the cross. And I realized that one of the themes in Jesus' life was continually to bring children into his midst. He would bring a child in and say, if you could be like this child, you could understand what I'm talking about. If you could humble yourself, let the little children come unto me. And so we wrote a song that just, the chorus is just, as a child I come, as a child I come to worship you. As a lyricist, I wanted to write more, but that's all we got. As a child I come, as a child I come to worship you. And then we wrote another section that just says, nothing more have I than this, than to lay down my burden, my heart knowing nothing more. Nothing more that you ask of me than to seek first your kingdom. A child knowing nothing more. Friends, there are a million things that will divide us. And it's all very well for us as preachers to try and put these into succinct thoughts for you so that you know to ask people to help you understand or not be stupid or but But this week, I was devastated by so many things. And my life was completely interrupted by things that were completely out of my control. And yet I had a focus to come together with the saints this morning just to do this. Because I think that this is worthwhile. I am absolutely convinced that gathering with the saints will determine our strength. Knowing Christ is not about isolationist stuff. You can't do this alone. You have to do this in community. And yes, you can certainly be a Christian without belonging to a church. That's not what I'm talking about. But you will stay a child if you don't mature with those around you. If you don't get this complex community to come together and try and figure out what the central point is. Otherwise, you'll just be on YouTube sending out, you know, conspiracy theories. And we waste so much of our mental and emotional energy doing that stuff. Well, he teaches us over and over again, take time out, come away with me, he says. Paul's saying to the church of Corinth, I set myself apart to bring you together. And Crispus and Sosthenes and Priscilla and Aquila and all of these people and there's Paulus, and there's so many amazing people there, but just come together. Push the immorality of the city aside and live righteous, live well. And come as a child and worship. And worship. And worship.